Broke Black Bougie is dedicated to the women who have lived through the experiences of brokenness, blackness, and the bougie lifestyle. It's focused on fostering candid conversations about life, money, and wellness for young black women. And it's relatable because we've all been there. Women having to make it on less than our worth. We do it while setting trends, spreading black assness, and ultimately busting our tails to live our best life. I'm your host, Charlie, and I want to welcome you to the Broke Black Bougie podcast. I know it's been a minute. It's really been a minute, and I shouldn't have left you without a strong beat to step two. Nah, but seriously, I shouldn't have left you this long without another episode. With my busy 9-to-5 and a very busy season and budget season and also working through this journey, it's been a lot, but I know that I have to pay more attention to my creative projects and as a founder, really put life into what I love and what is a part of me, right? And Broke Black Bougie is a part of me and my life experiences. And I know it's definitely something that we as young black women need. So I'm going to take more time. And as I revitalize this platform, I hope you will come along with me to tap in and really engage with the Broke Black Bougie community. But more so than that, remain a listener because we have amazing conversations coming up. We have special things that we're tapping into in regards to the brand and really rebranding and really tightening up what Broke Black Bougie is. And I know it's going to be something special that you all can relate to. And I just want to thank you in advance. Thank you for everyone who has ever supported, liked, commented, shared, tapped into the website, decided to subscribe to our newsletter. I just want to thank everybody for their support because all of it counts. All of it counts. Every period of transition, it all matters. Even if I have 1 to 2 consistent people, I just want to say thank you. And I know there's more than that. I'm just, you know, exaggerating a little bit. So with that being said, I want to highlight what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to have a candid conversation featuring me and my sister Latoyra tapping into financial trauma, financial anxiety, and all those little things that we just become frustrated about when it comes to our finances. We're going to talk about our shared experiences. We're going to touch upon therapy and how therapy has helped us make it through. And I'm going to tap in a little bit into how to cope with dealing with financial trauma. I hope this is an episode that y'all enjoy. It's going to be long-winded. It was pre-recorded, but I know this is something that you will all love. And please be sure to like, subscribe, share, you know, visit www.brokeblackbougie.com. And I'll talk to you later. All right, y'all. It's been a rough couple of weeks, okay? Very busy season. I know that this podcast episode is long overdue. However, to be transparent with y'all, it's been a lot going on. There's been some features that we thought would make it onto the podcast that didn't necessarily happen. And we're rearranging things to get things in order alongside, you know, the Broke Chat Live and also having candid conversations on this podcast. So with that being said, today, my energy is going to take a little bit turn, and yeah, we're going to have some fun moments, but we really want to have a serious conversation centered around financial trauma. For those of you who don't know, Financial Literacy Month is going to be next month in April, and a lot of individuals at this time are gearing up to provide people with resources and tools and, you know, how to maneuver Financial Literacy Month, especially entering into the second year of this pandemic. With that being said, I think it's completely, you know, important for us to have a candid conversation today about some of the impact of financial trauma and experiences that we have either with family, our own individual financial trauma, or just really maneuvering through scarcity. And the reason why I wanted to present this conversation today is in having conversation with my loved ones, I recognize that so many of us on different spectrums have faced financial trauma. And it's not something we often talk about, because it's like, what do you mean I have trauma associated with money? What does it mean to be an individual that's going through PTSD? You going through PTSD as it relates to money, that shit is not a thing. It actually really is. And so I thought there is no better guest to have this candid conversation with other than my sister Toya. And once again, Toya is going to be politicking with us today to really unpack financial trauma. We're going to read through an article, unpack some questions, talk about our experiences. And for me, I'm really honored to have her on, because as children, or as women who grew up as children living through poverty, we each had very similar experiences in regards to financial trauma, but we also had very different experiences in our trauma with money. So without further ado, I'm gonna tap into my sister and ask, girl, how do you do? How do you do?
I do fine. And yourself?
I's all right.
I's all right.
Girl, blackberry molasses, okay? For real. Why are you laughing?
I just had to. It's because it's you.
You was a fool, you know that? Because you was a punk. Where I got that from? The wood? Let's stick with that damn movie. Because
I was a punk.
Because you was a punk. Did they have some financial trauma in that damn movie? I'm over here thinking.
I don't think so. No.
Just was a lot of coming of age, you know what I'm saying? No, I'm just kidding. All right.
A lot of coming of age stuff.
Okay. Damn. But they was at the pizza spot. They didn't talk about money or somebody. No, they did. No, it wasn't financial trauma, but they was saving money for the booty jar. It was just disgusting. Anywho.
I'm so done.
All right. moving along. Okay. With that being said, we're going to tap into the next segment. All right, politicking with y'all, really unpacking financial trauma and our individual experiences and the science behind what it means to have financial PTSD. Let's get into it. Okay, so today to enter into this conversation, I want to pack a little bit about an article that was released in April of 2019. Discussing financial trauma is a reality for 1/3 of millennials, and this expert explains how to recover. This was written by Brianna West or Weist, who is a senior contributor to Forbes, and I'm going to read a bit of it before we get into our conversation today. Let's go. Having an exorbitant amount of debt, losing a job, entering the job market when the economy is crashing, being unable to afford health insurance or make home payments are more than just unfortunate circumstances. For some, the long-term effects of this kind of stress are palpable and resulting in symptoms characteristic of PTSD. We typically reserve this term trauma for a very specific set of circumstances, often the most drastic and abhorrent we can fathom. However, this often leads to people not recognizing trauma when they have it. As a result of these events, they maybe wouldn't have guessed. People have intense stress, paranoia, expectations, fears, and concepts about money and finances in a way almost nothing else can compare. Money can equate to security, safety, status, or power. Money can be interpreted as worthiness. There are so many unconscious ideas embedded in our relationship to money that it only makes sense that financial trauma is pervasive, yet it goes largely unaddressed. Millennials are disproportionately affected by financial trauma for all of the aforementioned reasons. Though there is no changing the past, learning what's causing constant money stress can help you ward recovering and regaining a sense of health. So what is financial trauma? Galen Buckwalter, the CEO of PsychML, an expert on financial trauma, explains, FT is characterized as a dysfunctional reaction to chronic financial stress. He notes that the symptoms often present similarly to those who experience post-traumatic stress disorder from other events. It interferes with the person's ability to carry out normal work and home life functions and manifests in multiple areas of the person's being. He explains, identifying the following symptoms: basic thought patterns regarding money that are negative and often involve rumination on failure. The ability to concentrate is short-circuited. Focus is often interrupted by nagging thoughts of financial doom. The individual sees their general environment as an increasingly hostile place, believing that it is only a matter of time before bad or worse things happen again. The individual's basic arousal system gets stuck in overdrive. Unresolved nervous energy takes hold. Jitteriness, insomnia, nightmares, etc. become chronic. Coping mechanisms such as avoidance or substance abuse increases. Fear regarding mail or phone calls: every time a phone rings, it's a bill collector, etc., etc. Joy slowly reduces, meaning is seldom found. Individuals begin to isolate as relationships can be costly. This is especially true if FT, financial trauma, from being controlled by someone else with money, or there is a fear relating to someone's personal life collapse causing that individual financially. The individual begins to increase their own security, even in months when they have sufficient funds, if not more than they even need. This disbelief regarding their own security leads to certain practices such as frugality or oversaving. However, these are often taken to an unhealthy and unsustainable extreme. What causes financial trauma? To break it down as simple as possible, financial trauma is caused when expenses outweigh income for an extended period of time. It is not the inability to pay that increases the trauma. It is often the string of events that follow. 1 month can easily turn into 3 months of falling behind. Basic necessities become threatened, such as housing, food, or healthcare. Friends or relatives might need to be approached for help, which can be embarrassing, and so on and so forth. This also can lead to fear and paranoia regarding work. So, psychologically, Butt Walter, who is the expert on this, explains that our stress reactivity systems are essentially hijacked by our environment. Our stress system was made to help us turn on every cell in our body in response to a threat to our existence. Fight or flight or freeze for those times when we just can't cope. But all of those systems were developed long before humans had even figured out what money was. Now that we can't pay all of our bills, our stress system goes all in. Much of the same as if a streak of tigers had ambushed us back in the day, except back in the day, we either made it out of the tiger's paths and were able to relax that night, or we were tiger food. But with financial trauma, there is no downtime. Our stress system is locked on overdrive. It is not how we were designed. So, how do you recover from it? There are a few things. The article poses that you can work to reduce debt, plan for the future, label your feelings, talk to a friend, talk to a professional, and stop avoiding. I want to stop right here before going into depth into those few items in which they're saying how we can recover from financial trauma in order to gain a healthy relationship with money. And I want to ask you, Toya, what are your thoughts regarding this article? Is it something that you agree with as an individual who has gone through financial trauma? And what is one of the earlier moments of financial trauma you can remember?
In some instances, yes, I do agree. Before you even said the fight or flight, that, like, my mind went right to that. Sometimes you really do want to run away from the problem at hand. How can you fight without having the financial means to fight? You know, when your expenses really truly outweigh your income. And, you know, just thinking about a lot, you know, with seeing, you know, your parents struggle with trying to keep food on the table along with clothes on your back, supplies for school, and dealing with any other expenses, whether it be keeping the car note up to date, keeping rent paid, and RNGE and all that other stuff. There was a I saw a lot that really I was taught from a very young age. What was your second question?
Unpacking experience that you recognized as a child, which you're touching upon now.
Yeah. A lot of times, parents should be aware of what they're teaching their kids. Yes, you can say a lot of things, but your actions speak louder than words. And for me, being at a young age, witnessing some of the things that was transpiring amongst my parents, and yet how they were maneuvering, making sacrifices. They would pay one thing and not pay the other. They were avoiding the calls that were coming in they had been debt collectors, or even with the bill that was coming in through the mail, stating about what was owed, and that had to put that on the back burner for a later time. But that later time never came.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you look at it, a lot of times you try to put your best foot forward, but of course life happens, and yet, things became strenuous. So.
I'm really glad that you said that, because for me, it's very much so the same, right? I agree with financial trauma and talking about, stress and the chronic reality of how chronic the reality of financial trauma can get when you're in it for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. But when you are going through financial trauma for years, and I'm talking about from being a child all the way up into your mid-20s, financial trauma hits very different. And I think it's very true, especially being a Black body and often understanding the different ways in which our racial identities or the demographics and where we come from impact our experience with financial trauma. Because growing up Black and growing up Black and poor is a very different experience, especially when you see how society talks about what it means to be in poverty, how Black people are often blamed for the conditions that they're in. And when we talk about financial stress, even if we are, stressing over money, I mean, there are so many times that her mom be like, I'm stressing, I'm going through it. And it could have been related to money. It could have been because a lot of her stuff was centered on money, but we knew that money was a core issue, right? But we didn't know how to necessarily resolve the problem, because it seems like that stress was reoccurring when money issues were also reoccurring, And so when I look at my own experiences, especially with financial trauma and unpacking what it means to work through it, I think it is something that is easier said than done, because sometimes you can't even name what it is that you're going through or how it hits you. You can recognize when you're stressed out because of money, but 3 weeks from now, everything may seem good, but you might have this weird feeling hovering over you and you not knowing what it is. And it could be that your body is responding to the post-traumatic stress of struggling, and it's just it's reacting or it's adapting differently when you're no longer in that struggle anymore.
And speaking on that, like you said, you don't really truly know what your body is going through. And I don't think a lot of us in the Black community can pinpoint it as financial trauma. We just consider it as not having what we need to survive.
Right.
So that fancy term with financial trauma, we don't look at it like that. And like you said, from the standpoint of what our community has dealt with, especially in the areas where we live at, a lot of the things are not beneficial for us.
Right.
If that makes sense. You get what I'm saying? So, I'm looking at the standpoint of, all the stressors that we deal with. And people don't realize stress can be an underlying to a lot of sickness. A heck of a lot of sickness. because I mean, you think about it, you tackle on stress, you know, you're having this anxiety, you know, and then what happens when, like, for instance, for us, you know, when what we were dealing with within our childhood, you know, when it came down to not having much, you know, how we were trying to get by or make do, you know, the sacrifices that were being made, you know.
Right. You know, and there's a few things that we're battling with within this trauma. It can be the experiences that we're facing, you know, mm-hmm. which is in response to our experiences with money, or how we see other people's experience with money, how it impacts us. It can be financial shaming, right? That we're often blamed for the experiences that we go through with our money. And it's shameful because there are so many factors tied into why our relationship with money exists. But there's also abuse, right? And mm-hmm. abuse can look many different ways when we're talking about financial trauma. Mm-hmm. It can be either out of us abusing, you know, the money that we have and the way that we're using our money, you know, where we're not prioritizing things that are important. It can be abuse as in a family member is using us as a ATM system, you know, or a fucking bank to rely on us to give them money and support their life when we don't have the means to do so. And then that can correlate to financial trauma that we experience. And so I've been seeing so many posts about people talking about them having issues with family members and dealing with financial abuse because they're giving what they don't have, and nobody is recognizing that nobody is able to eat properly if no one can focus on themselves and building towards their own financial wellness journey. There's been issues with people being able to cut back, you know, or just not even feeling comfortable with the way in which they have a relationship with a family member and how it has impacted their relationship with money. So, like, what advice do you have for people, or what is it rather that you have to say in regards to those scenarios where there is abuse and trauma, you know, coming together as one and creating such a traumatic experiences for those who face it?
I cannot tell you how many times I've heard or been involved with conversations where family and money have not mixed. Mm. And yet it has tarnished so many relationships based on cash flow. And people need to realize it is okay to tell your loved ones no. It is okay to say no. Because look, you may think that I have this amount of cash in my account to be keep constantly giving to you, in which I don't. And even if I did, if I am not where I need to be financially to make sure that I am secure, mm-hmm. why would I keep dishing out money and then after a while, we're both going to drown? Mm-hmm. Because nobody is recognizing the harm in me keep dishing out, and yet I'm not putting anything back to save. I had to learn that. I really had to learn that, you know. It is okay to say no. It really is. And realizing that sometimes you have to be selfish for you. It's not being nasty towards anybody else, but yet knowing where you need to stand at, especially where I'm at in my life as of right now. You know? I need to have some security. I need to have something to fall back upon where I know I'm okay. And yet I still have the feeling sometimes of, okay, you know, when you have, like you say, with the anxiety and the stress that you have when it comes to your finances, yes, even when you do have enough, you still feel like you don't have enough, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know, yes, you do have the dollar amount that you wanted to accumulate, and you made it, and now you still feel like it's not enough. There's anxiety of losing it all. There's anxiety of, okay, what will happen next? Like, you're like, it's almost as if you're waiting for the next catastrophe to happen to you, because you've been dealing with a love and hate relationship with money.
Right.
And I can honestly say throughout, you know, my teenage years up until now, I've had a love and hate relationship, more so a hate relationship when it has come to money. because I look at my account, and yet sometimes looking at my account, you thinking like, wow, this really validates who I am. And that's truly not what it is. When you want to have an avoidance of bill collectors contacting you, which really you shouldn't, you should really be able to talk to people and say, listen, this is my situation. What can we do to figure this out?
Mm-hmm.
But yet not being taught that, not being taught that, you automatically run from it. Even when it comes down to you making a budget or having a plan to pay the bills that maybe you can't pay as of right now, but yet setting a payment plan to do something to pay for it later, you know, it's always been an avoidance. But as of, you know, as I've gotten older, I realized that, listen, these people are doing their job, and I need to do my job as well. We're saying, like, listen, I don't have an exit right now. Can I make a payment, or can I postpone it to this date where I will have the means to pay it? You know, these things I had to learn over a period of time. And yet, it wasn't taught to me. I had to learn it on my own. So,
you know, I so appreciate you saying that, because when we were growing up, we were often told, you know, save your money, don't spend it, this, that, and the third. But we weren't taught the proper tools in which how to save, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is because our parents were informed about certain things in regards to money, so that they can only go so far with their parenting, right? Because there are certain things that they simply don't know. And I feel like all parents have a certain, you know, space, time, experience in which they, how can I explain this? In which there are just certain things you simply don't know. As a parent, you're not going to know everything. But I also think that our experiences with money, some of the harsh realities that we had to face, we weren't equipped with what we needed, the resources that we needed to face them. And that contributed to the trauma that we experienced, you know, especially if you have to help out your family and you don't have it, but you give it because, you know, you feel bad, or you don't want anything to happen. And then you get trapped in this cycle of always giving, 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 and then not having anyone to go to help you, you know? And it almost feels like you're stuck in an abusive pattern or a abusive relationship, and you really want to help, but you recognize that you yourself needs help, and then now you're depressed. And I know I joke all the time about, like, being in a broke depression, but when you are broke, you literally be broke down and out. You literally be struggling, trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B. And this is why scarcity, the book that I was reading, let me make sure that I have it up properly so I can give credit to these authors. But Scarcity, Why Having Too Little Means So Much. When I was reading that, it changed my entire mindset about my reality and about what I was experiencing, because a lot of it was tied to living on little and then constantly being consumed with thoughts that, oh my God, I don't have enough. Oh my God, this is going on. Oh my God, oh my God. Oh, like you remember that SpongeBob episode when Squidward is like alone and he's sitting in that white room, and all it is words that's like alone, 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 yes. And all of those, yes, different shapes. That's what being broke is like. Not only are you alone, 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 you broke, you broke, you broke, you broke. You start thinking of ways, how can I get quick money? Who do I know that could help me flip this $50? Like, you really be thinking. Nah, for real. You really be thinking like this, like, who can I call? I mean, I don't want to talk to this person because I know they're going to be on some shit about it. Or, like, I know this motherfucker right now got some money. Why can't they give it to me? Like, you be going through it.
It's not that we're laughing at the situation. It's just that now you're almost, it's not almost, you are acting irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're making right now irrational decisions.
Yep.
Based upon how you're trying to get out of this predicament, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're not thinking straight. You know, like you said, all your emotions are coming up to the surface, and yet at this moment, you're literally in panic mode.
Yep.
So how you gonna flip $50 if you only got 50 to flip? Because if it doesn't go right and you lose the 50, then what?
Mm.
You know?
Talk about it.
So you just, you look at those situations or the famous line of them all. Well, when I hit the lottery, listen, people.
Baby.
I know
baby.
When we hear those large numbers for the Mega Millions, as well as Powerball, we automatically give our $1 or $2. I get it. We all want to play. We all want to be that one in trillion, however many, you know, one of one million's chance of getting it. But, you know, that's not the end all to be all. And yet, you know, when you wake up the next day and you didn't happen to win, now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what's sad that I've noticed within our community is that we have not been taught financial literacy. And it's, like I said, for a lot of my experiences, I was a visual learner, and I've learned from those who were around me, the same way with possibly my parents, and yet other relatives of mine, you know?
Mm.
And it's a never ending cycle. And, you know, when somebody gets something of what to somebody else may be, some type of financial growth, now automatically some people are coming from them for them to say, hey, you know, can you give me this at a third for whatever, and it's like, no, I can't, because I'm not where I need to be. So what do? You're at a loss. You don't want to feel like you're being mean. You don't want to feel like, okay, this person's going to hate me if I say this to them. So, yeah, I've been that person where I've given and given and given until I couldn't give anymore. And, yeah, I'm literally running on fumes right now, giving out stuff. And yet, where's my gas needed for my vehicle to keep moving? Because right now I'm stranded. I'm stuck. I don't have the bandwidth. That was something I really learned from that book.
Scarcity.
What was it again, the title?
Scarcity.
I didn't have the bandwidth. And, you know, looking back years ago, I never had the bandwidth to be dishing out that much money. And now I'm slowly building up to where I needed to be within my 20s, where I'm at now at this age. You know, which I'm not going to say. I'm still young. Hello.
Girl, bye. It's almost like playing catch up, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, you made a great point. You said we don't have financial literacy, but it goes beyond just being educated, right? It's about having the framework, having the resources, and having the capital. And the capital is what we lack. People all the time say, well, it don't matter how much money you make, you know, if you're not going to be able to manage it, it's going down the drain. Yes, I understand that. But I also know that there are people who are poor who know how to make money stretch like never before. If I can make $80 stretch for a week, I know how to manage $8,000.
If I can manage to make $20 stretch for a week,
you can manage 20,000.
Thank you.
Without a doubt. You know, it's that our framework tends to work when we're underneath the stress of not having enough. There's a no-brainer. It's like, oh, I'm gonna take this little money that I have, I'm gonna make this work because it's all that I have. When you have a little bit more money, it's the same thing. This is all that I have. So I'm going to make this work because at this moment in time, this is all that I have. A lot of us are operating from a place of scarcity. So this trauma that we're facing even when we do have money, you become sick almost.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just about to say that.
Because it's like, what do I do? Where does this go? Does it mean I can purchase this? You know, you start limiting yourself. You start acting out as that individual that has lived in scarcity for a long time. And that's nobody's fault. That's a real reality that a lot of people face, but it's nobody's fault. And the reason why I bring this up is because I remember when I got a job and it was like $33,000. And I'm like, looking back on it at how much I'm making today, I'm like, that was poverty wages. Okay. After taxes, living on your own, trying to make it, not having anybody to help you out. Like that was a struggle. And when I think about it, at that time, I was just like, oh my God, this is the most I've ever made. And I'm going to be fine. And then when I lost that position, it was the most traumatic experience I've ever faced. I think, especially when it comes to, you know, job security and access, because it's like when you lose your only source of income, it triggers you in a very different way.
Yes, it does.
It makes you feel like, this is the end. I don't have any help. I won't have any help. So what do you do? And I think a lot of individuals, especially in this pandemic, they found themselves feeling like, this is a wrap.
Right. It's eye-opening. It's truly eye-opening. And the amount of unemployment that we have seen throughout this pandemic has been, I can't even imagine. But my heart really goes out to those who were living paycheck to paycheck.
I
I'm not taking away from those who have, you know, who had six-figure positions that may have lost their job for whatever reason, or if they had to downsize, whatever the case may have been. But my heart really goes out to those who have been who were living paycheck to paycheck, because when you're living paycheck to paycheck, that's in dire straits.
It's a very different experience coming from somebody who was making six figures and coming from an individual who is living paycheck to paycheck. So I completely get it, you know? And like I said, when it was like the first few months when we were living in the pandemic, it was so quiet. Mm-hmm. Wasn't nobody outside. It was the most eeriest thing ever. The streets were silent, okay? And then when people started coming back out again, especially those who were Ubering. I tip my hat off to those who were Ubering. I tip my hat off to those who were door dashing, dropping off Uber Eats and food to people. I tip my hat off to those who were in the food industry. I tip my hat off to those on the front lines, individuals like you, Toya. I really do tip my hat off, because I said this, and I said it once before. I'm going to say it again. It was a privilege to be able to work from home. It was a privilege to be able to work from home. It was a privilege to still be able to have a paycheck. And then one of us are too far from being broke.
Right.
And so when I think about what it means to be financially healthy, or, you know, go on that road down financial wellness, it looks different for everyone. Just like the struggle and the different things that impact us financially look different from everyone. Being $100,000 in debt, being $200,000 in debt. Actually, there are people who are $250,000, $275,000 in debt for just a school degree. That hits me different. You understand what I'm saying? That's some stress that would really be triggering for me.
You can even be $2,000 or $3,000 in debt, and you don't have the means to pay for it. That can also be stressful.
Right. It's so going to,
like you said, it's a different scale.
It will look different to everyone. And this is something that I thought that the the article did really well because they said there is no one way to define what it means to be financially healthy because it will look different on everyone. However, generally speaking, we tend to think that the only way to achieve financial health is to follow the lead of those who are they need to stop with all these big words, but we're going to get it together. Conscientious. Yes. Buckwalter explains that the disconnect is often that the financial system is set up to benefit those with a banker's personality. And so anyone who doesn't think like that or think that way feels as though they are at a disadvantage. More than anything else, financial health is about determining what works for you. And it's about being able to live as you desire, but also caring for yourself in the future without a debilitating degree of stress surrounding your concept of money. Girl.
Listen.
Can we breathe a little bit on that one?
Listen, let that ride out right there.
Let it marinate.
Oh, man. What are your thoughts about that?
Everyone will be like, if you save $1,000 and eat rice and beans, you'll be completely fine. If you save $5,000, what's that to somebody who's renting in New York City?
That's nothing.
In 2 months, that's their rent. $10,000, what's that to somebody living in LA? You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's like, ain't no proper survival skills to this shit other than people have to be able to make enough so that they could sufficiently save, reach a goal that gives them comfortability to live their life within their fucking means and be comfortable doing it. People have to have multiple streams of income and not have to always trade in their labor to get a bag. And people have to be thoroughly committed, okay, to not fearing money. Even though we've been taught to fear money, we got to be committed to not fearing money. Because it's a great thing when we're able to breathe, and people deserve that. And not everyone is not everyone is starting from the same playing field. So it's like we have to look at the levels, right? These different levels or tiers that exist, rather, and all of the isms that impact our experiences with money, and all of the experiences that we as individuals have and what that means for our financial future. It's not just I always say all the time, it's important for you to know your formula, but part of you being able to know your formula goes beyond just numbers. You got to know who you are.
Yeah. And, oh man, you just hit everything you hit all the nails on the head. I mean, right now, I am becoming to understand how to have more than just one income.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding other avenues of making my money work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that has taken me a long time. I'm in my 30s now. And yet some of the things is new to me, but yet every day is a lesson that I'm learning how to make it work for me, understanding a lot more than I did the day before. So, and yet too, being smarter with utilizing my cash, making sure that I'm not overspending, and yet too, I'm not underspending. If I decided to buy something for myself, I can do that without feeling anxiety and nervous and like, oh my God, I shouldn't be buying this. No, it's just having that, like I said, before, having a love and hate relationship with money. I'm starting to, like you said, understand my relationship with how I treat money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even speak for myself. I'm, having a relationship of how I deal with money.
I love that so much. I love that so much. What I want to close on is focusing on the tips that they provided, because it talks a lot about, it relates a lot to what you just said, right? Mm-hmm. Dealing with anxiety, figuring out the relationship that you want with money. So let's get into it and unpack and close out the politicking segment. So, all right, first things first, the author identified working to reduce debt, right? And so paying down high interest debt is important because when you're working on reducing this type of debt, you become more aware about what you owe and you can help to restore a sense of control. A lot of us are out of control when it comes to our debt. We feel like our debt is consuming us and we don't ever tackle it. So it's just like, here I am. 2, plan for the future. Putting a small amount of money away towards retirement or your own savings account, even when you are traumatized or in survival mode, you know, thinking beyond your immediate circumstances can be helpful for you and can help you circumvent this feeling. 3, labeling your feelings. That's very important because a lot of us are anxious surrounding our finances and we recognize that something is going on or something may be off, but we don't know exactly where it comes from. You know, so having a healthy response to be able to identify what we are feeling is important because it can help us maneuver through. They also note 2 more things. Well, actually 3 more things, but these 2 more things go in. So point number 4 and point number 5 is talk to a friend and talk to a professional. So isolation is a very important, it's a very real thing. I'll say that it's important to acknowledge that you're isolating, but it happens often when you're facing financial trauma. So getting social support can help change stress reactivity that creates financial trauma, and being open about your fears and discussing them can help remind you that most people go through financial hardship at some point in their lives and that you don't have to deal with it alone. You know, it's more universal than you think. 5, talk to a professional. If it gets to the point where you are contemplating suicide, thinking about stress and panicking, and it's taking a significant toll on your life, it's important that you consult a mental health professional to equip you with the tools that you need to navigate that, you know, because a lot of people, you know, financial stress and suicide is more common than we think. And a lot of people don't really know how to say that they need help or are just very confused about what it even means to face financial trauma and feel like you just don't no longer want to be on this earth because of what you're going through. 6, the author says, stop avoiding. The point is not to be able to remove the triggers. What you mean? The point is not to be able to remove the triggers, like never checking your credit card balance or savings account. Rather, being able to work through the triggers. Okay, all right, I see where you was going now. I see where you was going. At first, I wasn't like, hell no.
Right.
Remember that fear thrives in the unknown. Get clear about what you need and what's happening in your financial life, and the easier it will become. Thoughts?
Thoughts? It's to really, you know, talk this stuff out. Really, really, really discuss. Do not be afraid to discuss what's really bothering you when it comes to your finances.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we hide so much, and yeah, we keep so much bottled up that it's not really benefiting us much because the problem is still there. The debt is still there. The lack of not having is still there because of whatever, you know, whatever the case may be when it comes to dealing with your money, just be able to talk about it. If you're in a relationship with somebody and y'all both are struggling, discuss what are your goals are to conquering that debt, to making sure that, you know, we're putting something aside for savings, you know, how we're doing with, you know, other expenses within the household, you know, being able to really discuss that. I think from what we've seen, you know, growing up, it's always been a one-sided conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that has not always been the healthiest conversation. We've seen that time and time again, not only from within our household, but from others.
Yep.
And that can also contribute to this financial trauma, you know, as you become, as for those of us kids who've seen our parents deal with money in a negative way.
Talk about it. Well, I thank you for sharing space on today's episode. It ain't even about catching a coin. It's about catching these feelings and dealing with our emotions and working through trauma. And transparency moment for me, it got to the point where I was facing so much financial trauma that I needed to go to therapy to get help. And I felt like I was at the point of no return. And I want to say that therapy definitely has helped me realize and be able to call things out and identify what's going on and use tools to help me become a better person. And, you know, to create a platform or further my platform to be able to help other women just speak out and get the resources that they need, especially when it comes to life, money, wellness, our career, our relationships, interpersonal relationships. You know, damn it, the relationships we got with ourselves, the relationships we have with other people, the relationships we have with our community. So it's very important because people can survive financial trauma. They really can. They just need to be equipped with the proper tools. And hell, coins. Because everyone needs more money. But the folks who already got it.
And yet, too, not being afraid to speak your truth.
Yeah. Thank you, Sissy Pool. I love you always.
I love you too, Sugar Plum.
If you like this episode of Broke Black Bougie, be sure to visit us on www.brokeblackbougie.com. Head to Instagram.com/brokeblackbougie, and like Broke Black Bougie on Facebook. Till next time. Talk to you in your ear soon. 1 simple thank you for listening through this episode, for making it through. And if any of you are trying to cope with your financial anxiety, any trauma, PTSD that you've been facing surrounding your finances, I highly advise you to seek a professional. Me and my sister are not professionals. We're not therapists who can help you navigate it. We're just individuals who have tapped into our journey and have utilized this platform to really speak life and talk about what's real. So I wish you so many much blessings in your experience and journey towards healing. And I hope this makes you become stronger to walk down your financial wellness journey. And I hope you have a positive experience. It's not easy. Things won't be resolved overnight, but it's definitely worth it to identify things that have been bothering you, what you can work on, and how you can cope. Because everybody deserves to be living and thriving and not just surviving to live, or just living and surviving. Like, no, we deserve to thrive. So with that being said, I look forward to talking in your ear soon. And thank you for tapping into this episode of the Broke Black Bougie podcast.